I'm Mark Milton with Bill Schaefer, and this is Growing Bolder, the program that shows you that it is possible to make some small changes in your life that will result in big rewards and help you be the person you've always wanted to become. In the next hour, we will find out how you can follow your passion and actually profit from it as you head towards retirement. And we'll hear the inspiring story of an accident victim who has battled all the way back to make the U.S. team at the Para Triathlon World Championships.
Wow, good stuff. We're also going to meet one of the founding members of the 60s San Fran psychedelic band Quicksilver Messenger Service. The guy is still rocking, folks. And later, he went to Jefferson Starship, still on tour today. All stories that are going to make you think, hey, maybe I can do anything. And that's what we call Growing Bolder. How hard did the recession kick you in the bank account? Did your retirement nest egg shrink to almost nothing? Wait. Maybe it doesn't matter as much as you think. You're about to hear how much retirement living has less to do with your investments and much more to do with trimming the fat from your expenses.
Yeah, an interesting thought. This guy has just written a new book that is offering a fresh perspective on financial advice. In fact, it's really not just about retirement. It's how to live a sustainable lifestyle at any age, not to restrict you, but to give you the freedom to do the things that you really want to do. The book is called How to Retire the Cheapskate Way, the Ultimate Cheapskate's Guide to a Better, Earlier, Happy Retirement. Welcome back, the Ultimate Cheapskate. For some more cheap talk, our buddy Jeff Yeager. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me back on your show.
Yeah, you know what?
And as always, thanks for calling me on your dime.
Yeah, the price is right. Your fee is perfect.
Yeah. Call me cheap. Just never call me collect. You know how I am.
You know, you really are at the forefront of what a lot of people are starting to say now, that, you know, one of the quickest ways to be happy is to have less. And, you know, we were all raised in this consumer culture where the more we had, the happier we thought we would be. But now, you know, getting rid of stuff is really a pretty quick path to happiness, huh?
Yeah, one of the quotes from the book is, you know, we're not about trying to have the best of everything. We make the best of everything we have. And, you know, this was an interesting idea to explore in the context of retirement, because if there's ever a time in your life when you're going to think about what's really important and, you know, what do you really want out of life, it's those retirement years.
But yet you go to any financial expert in the country anywhere, tell them you want to put together a plan for your retirement. Every minute of that meeting, Jeff, is going to revolve around, well, let's look at your investments.
Investing, yeah. And that's one of the novel things about my book. Well, I've written four of them, and none of them are about how to get rich. All of them are about, if you will, how to get happy, perhaps with what you already have. So I don't give any investing advice at all. In the book, my basic argument is based on all of these thousands of cheapskates I know, is that you may be able to retire on much less than you think if you get your lifestyle priorities straight and your financial priorities straight. And I don't encourage people to undersave, but there's a lot of evidence out there that actually, because of financial advisors, many people tend to oversave for retirement.
You are definitely the right guy at the right time with the right message, because as we know, you know, not only are we going to live longer after we retire if we take care of ourselves, and Bill and I are certainly encouraging everybody to do that, we're going to live more active lives. So, you know, something's got to give, and changing your lifestyle, or simple sizing, as you call it, is critical. What is simple sizing?
It's like downsizing, but it's based on this very fundamental principle that whenever you simplify your life, it tends to do two things. It tends to make you spend a lot less money, and here's the best part, it tends to make us happier. You know, we've become such a materialistic society. Per capita consumption has grown 1% for each of the past 50 years. We're consuming so much more. We're spending so much more. But there's no scientific evidence at all that we're any happier. In fact, most of the evidence says we're less happy than before. So mine is not a philosophy about deprivation and sacrifice. It's about sitting down and deciding, you know, what's really important in life. The premise of the book is you can lead any kind of lifestyle you want in retirement, and you can spend more on it or you can spend less. And so I'm not saying this is the kind of lifestyle you should have, But I'm just showing you how through some basic principles you can get whatever you want, and it might not cost as much as you think.
And you know what the deal is, Jeff, because you've done enough lectures. I'm sure you look out over the crowd and everyone's nodding their head because we get it. But then you start to think about it and, ooh, am I going to give up that new smartphone with the unlimited data or the 1,000 cable TV channels with the sports package and Netflix? Or, ooh, how about that car lease I got a great deal and trading up every couple of years? How do we break out of the cycle of doing that?
Yeah, it's really, it's a hard thing to do because we're bombarded by so many advertisements saying that if you buy all that stuff, you're somehow going to be happier. But I think you really need to sit down and take stock of, part of it is taking stock of what you already have, and that gets to this idea of simple sizing. If it's not something you've used recently, you really don't need it. If you practice what I call spending procrastination, put off till tomorrow what you're tempted to buy today, you'll find most of the time you'll never buy that, and you'll be just as happy or happier that you didn't. So I always offer a lot of practical advice for, to begin with, just reining in impulse and discretionary spending. The fact is Americans regret about 80% of the discretionary items they buy. And that's not to say they totally regret them. They may still buy some of them. We all know that feeling of buyer's remorse. And I think as people near retirement, and this book is for people of any age. It's, the earlier you adopt the advice, the better. But as you near those retirement ages, I think you really start to think, gosh, what is important, what isn't important. One of the interesting things in the book was this, and it's borne out by U.S. Census data, is that people tend to spend significantly less the older they grow, with the exception of health care. So as I say in the book, I think that aging causes IF, which, of course, guys, is increased frugality.
And, you certainly have touched upon a basic point. It seems like the less stuff we have, the more we appreciate it. I mean, I can remember when I was thrilled with a rock and a stick. And, you've got so much stuff now that it does become a burden even to keep track of it. And you've come up with some principles, Jeff, and I think you've touched on one of them at least, that we can live by that will make a difference in our lives. Can you share with us a couple of the basic principles that can help us enjoy less?
Yeah, I identify sort of 20 overriding principles throughout the book based on these interviews I did with frugal folks. And certainly the big one is live consistently below your means during your working years. Live within your means always, live below your means whenever you can. And it sounds so simple, but of course very few Americans do it. If you do that, as you get ready, as you approach retirement, you'll notice, one, that you've automatically been able to set aside a lot of savings. And two, you've been really test driving your retirement lifestyle and budget. Most people only think about a budget at the point of retirement. And the third great thing that allows you to do if you do it early enough in life is it allows you to avoid these high risk investment schemes that are attempted to build wealth in the 11th hour.
You mean those things aren't all above board and totally honest and legit?
Well, as I say, most retirement planning books are, as you noted, written about investing, and I would reclassify many of them from nonfiction to fiction. They're a nice fictional read, but they just didn't work out that way. And mine should be a comforting, reassuring message, because my contention is the spending side of personal finance is at least as important as the investing side. And it's something that we control or choose not to control each and every day.
Well, two big ways, Jeff. I guess one is to spend less, obviously. Another maybe is to bring in even a little bit more. Are there ways that retirees can generate some extra income?
Yeah, and I have a chapter in the book because what I found anecdotally was a whole bunch of my cheapskates, once they do retire, they still continue to work at like a little cottage industry that they oftentimes start themselves. I call it being selfishly employed. Something that you can just play around with that's not full-time work, that doesn't require a big investment. I give sort of 50 ideas for selfish employment ventures in the book. But oftentimes the model is that these retired cheapskates will try to, through those ventures, earn enough that they can earn up to that maximum amount that they can earn without decreasing their Social Security benefit. And that varies depending on your status. But in most cases, you can earn at least $10,000. And it won't decrease your benefits. So they're playing around with these ventures, and it's as much to fill their time as to populate their bank accounts, and they're having a lot of fun doing it.
We got a guy coming up on a future episode who's going to talk to us about the growing trend of of retiring abroad. What do you think about that? Can cheapskates make a good go of retirement in a foreign country?
I talk quite a bit about it in the book, although there are entire books written, not just on that subject, but entire very popular books written about retiring in just one country. I mean, it's an up-and-coming trend. But I do, I think, a nice overview of it in my book, saying that it certainly is possible to to live someplace abroad where you can enjoy a standard of living that you couldn't afford here. And I talk even about the prospect of going overseas to have certain medical treatments done, which is a burgeoning field of the travel industry. And even if you're not inclined to leave the United States, the whole notion that I explore in some detail in the book of the cost of living differences in different parts of the country, the pros and cons of living in different parts of the country. In one case, a couple I interviewed in Minneapolis area thought they wanted to move to Florida. Then they decided they had too many friends in Minneapolis. They found that basically by moving to a different part of the same town where they'd always lived, they were able to cash in a house and retire that much earlier because they moved to a more modest place.
Hey, Jeff, isn't it kind of interesting for you to look at? I mean, when you first started, however many books ago, you were almost always defending the word cheapskate, and, trying to let people know that it wasn't necessarily a negative thing. And now here you are. We're all anxious to jump in the cheapskate bandwagon with you.
Well, and, I write really with a sense of humor, so I don't use cheapskate in a pejorative sense. To me, a cheapskate is just the polar opposite of a conspicuous consumer. Call us frugal, call us thrifty. I use the word cheapskate to kind of intrigue people and capture their imagination. And then, talk about what I think is the virtuous side of leading a simpler, more frugal lifestyle. It's not about sacrifice and deprivation at all. I mean, I would argue that the type of cheapskate I'm talking about is actually much happier in their lives, certainly than people who are deeply in debt, having purchased stuff which now is an albatross.
You tell me you're not going to just hang up the phone, run out and get in your limo, fly to your Learjet, and then head across the country to your...
No, I really walk the walk. Anybody that knows me knows that I believe in this stuff deeply, and I talk truthfully in my books, particularly my earlier books, about how much money I have, which I'm not rich by some standards, but I'm not poor. I have a nice enough house, and I'm willing to talk about and share all that personal information, not to be preachy, but to say, gee, you don't need to dumpster dive and live in a, wherever to lead this kind of lifestyle, that you can actually pick and choose. And it's deciding what's important in life and skipping the rest.
It's How to Retire the Cheapskate Way. It'll make you think about things a little differently. His name is Jeff Yeager.
Stay connected to Growing Boulder for daily doses of hope, inspiration, and possibility. Find us on YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram for our latest stories, reels, and motivational memes.
When it comes to your daily habits, do you take vitamins? Well, did you know the supplement industry has exploded into a billion-dollar business? But we're going to save you a few bucks right now by telling you how to get everything you need just by adding a few important items while you eat. Let's find out more from registered dietitian and nutritionist, Dr. Susan Mitchell.
Thanks, Bill. Hi, foodie friends. Before you pick up that supplement bottle, you might be surprised to hear that nutrient-packed foods can power up your defenses naturally. Now, I think about food in two ways. First, I love to eat, so the food has to be good or I'm not wasting my calories. How about you? Then I see food as an opportunity, a chance to improve my health with every meal or snack. Do you think of food that way? The more we learn about food, the more powerful we find out that it is.
Isn't it amazing how little we actually know? So how do we eat healthy? And I guess this is a $64,000 question. And at the same time, like the foods
right
that are good for us.
Well, there's so many ways. So let's try these three health-boosting foods. Barley is an ancient grain that packs plenty of insoluble fiber, which can lower cholesterol and help protect against cancer. cancer. One of my favorite ways to use barley is to add it to split pea soup. Quick cooking and gives even more texture to the soup. Next, pomegranates. Known for their antioxidant content, the arils, the seeds with that bright red fleshy fruit attached, they're beautiful in sauces and just tossed in a spinach salad. A nice source of potassium, pomegranates can help lower blood pressure. And quinoa, it's a gluten-free grain that's actually a seed and a source of magnesium, which may help reduce headaches and regulate blood sugar. Quinoa is a great way to add protein to a meal. If you're wondering how to cook it, check out Cooking with Quinoa for Dummies, written by Cheryl Forberg, dietitian for TV's The Biggest Loser, for a wide selection of recipes.
Cooking it's the easy part. Pronouncing it or spelling it is even tougher. She is registered dietitian and nutrition expert, Dr. Susan Mitchell. He used to blow their minds at the Fillmore with Quicksilver Messenger Service in the 60s. Know what? He's still touring and rocking out at 75. David Freiberg is next. This is Growing Bolder. Sign up for the Growing Bolder Insider Newsletter. Be the first to see our latest interviews, stories, and tips for making each day count. Sign up today at growingbolder.com. Miss an episode of Growing Bolder Radio? Subscribe to our podcast and get it on your mobile device. Details at growingbolder.com/podcasts. I don't know about you guys. I love Quicksilver Messenger. Considered maybe to be the greatest example of San Francisco psychedelic music from one of the most magical times in the history of rock music.
In fact, folks, there were two bands that really captured the spirit and the sound of that era. Quicksilver and, of course, also Jefferson Airplane / Starship. And our next guest was in both of those bands. You want to hear something else incredible? While many from back then have passed on or turned on to other things, he is still performing, still touring, and still an integral part of Jefferson Starship. We are grateful and excited to have a chance to say hello to David Freiberg. Hey, David, how are you?
I'm fine, Bill and Mark. How are you guys doing?
Man, it is great to have you with us. And I guess the question I'd like to ask right off the top is, back in the 60s, did you ever, in your wildest dreams, and I'm certain there were some wild ones back there, did you ever think that
some pretty wild dreams.
But did you ever think that at the age of 75, you'd still be touring the country, getting ready to head to Italy and Germany and playing gigs?
No, I couldn't imagine reaching the age of 40, to tell you the truth. But yeah, no, but as I'm here, I can't see anything else to do.
You know, David, we lost so many greats from that era. You lost so many personal friends. You were right there for everything. How did you make it through yourself?
A lot of people went way too early, it seemed. I'm not trying to figure out how I managed to take care of myself, but somewhere around the age of 40, I decided to get in shape, and I started running. So by the time I was 40, I was in the best shape of my life. I think that's the only reason I'm still around now.
And obviously, you know, you were hooked into playing, composing, performing, you know, doing the whole thing when you were younger. Does it still have its hooks in you? I mean, are you excited about, are you as passionate about what you do today as you were 5 decades ago?
You know, believe it or not, when I'm at home and I've been there for a month, I really can't wait to get back out and play for people again. I mean, there's nothing like communicating with a bunch of really good musicians on the stage that are your friends and it's so much fun. I can't explain it.
You guys, man, when you're on stage, the age is not even evident. The smiles are there, except of course on Kantner. And I gotta let me throw this at you, because Mark and I were talking about this before we talked to you. How Grace Slick, who I've met and love, said that nobody your age should be up there on the stage ever. You know, is that tongue in cheek?
Well, everyone's entitled to their opinion.
And have you ever had like a debate with her about that, or is she tongue in cheek?
No. I don't. I guess I'm lucky to be a man, because there seems something about a beautiful woman tends to think that that's all that they have going. you know, because Grace was such a beautiful young lady, and she's a beautiful woman now. So I don't quite understand it. She thinks people look dumb doing it. I don't know. Does she still think the stones shouldn't go out? They're still doing it. I mean, I don't know. I can't imagine doing anything else, and I can't imagine stopping. I mean, as long as I'm having fun, who's gonna? How can you stop?
Yeah, amen. And what?
And it must not have been fun for her when she stopped. So, yeah. And I understand because I mean, I stopped for 20 years in 1985 through 2005. I stopped going on the road. It wasn't fun being in a band when I left. It wasn't what I was doing. You know. Wasn't what I did, David, you know.
David, you're talking about the time when Starship got real poppy, and it just wasn't.
They got real poppy, and I think all the songs were being written by outside writers, and it was just getting the next top 10 hit or something. That's what it felt like to me. And that isn't what I did. I mean, I just like to play organic music with whoever's in the band.
Well, you know, we talked to a lot of people on this program that are trying to find a way to reconnect with the passions of their youth. So, you know, keep it up, man. Do your thing. I read once that you actually met Janis Joplin even before the San Francisco scene. What was she like back then?
She was just a little lost girl. First time I ran into her, I had been deported from Mexico. Now, I won't even... We don't need to go into that. It's a long, long story. But I ended up in Austin, and we were folk singers, and we ended up at the student union at the University of Texas at the Folk Music Society, and there was this girl with an auto harp singing Irish ballads, and it was Janis, and she had this beautiful voice. It wasn't yet the screaming blues thing, you know, and then we exchanged addresses with her and this guy named Chet Helms, who was there also. And he ended up starting the Avalon Ballroom in San Francisco, and they both came out, and I think they were sleeping on my floor for the first week or so they showed up.
And yeah, that's when you were in the Hate. You know, Cincinnati kid moves to the Hate, and you're there from the beginning, and you know you were there
right.
you were also there to quickly see it start to spiral down. Was that as magical as we the media's made it out to be, David? And is there any way we'll ever have?
There
anything?
Was a couple of weeks in the, during the Summer of Love, or actually the summer before the official Summer of Love was really nice. But as soon as it became a big thing and you were on the Time magazine, it had to fall apart because there were just too many people just showing up to look for something that wasn't there anymore, if you know what I mean.
How did you guys miss out on Woodstock?
Gary Duncan, one of the two guitar players in Quicksilver, had left the band, and we were in the middle of recording an album without him. And we weren't touring, and so nobody knew Woodstock was going to be Woodstock until it was, you know. It was just another gig until all of a sudden, whoa, look at this. Who thought 500,000 people would show up?
Yeah, and you did Monterey, and you said that was probably the greatest gig you ever did.
Oh, Monterey was probably the most enjoyable thing. I mean, where else you can see Otis Redding and Jimi Hendrix and The Who and Jefferson Airplane and Crosby, or The Birds, and...
We got about a minute to go here. I want to put you on the spot and ask you the big question. Out of all that you've been through and all that you've seen, what can we learn, David, from your life?
Never give up. It's your dream. Do it. Is that too simple?
No, it is what it is. We say that all the time, too, and it's great to hear.
It is what it is. I mean, you are yourself. And I mean, I'm a Buddhist, so... I try to see the Buddha in everything, everywhere I look, because I know it is there, you know. So I am the Buddha, and you are the Buddha, too.
He's the wonderful and talented David Freiberg. Thanks for the visit, David. Up next, a devastating car accident and a serious brain injury had doctors wondering if he'd even survive. Wait till you hear how he defied the odds. This is Growing Bolder.
Stay connected to Growing Bolder for daily doses of hope, inspiration, and possibility. Find us on YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram for our latest stories, reels, and motivational memes.
need us to tell you that no matter who you are, what you look like, how much money you do or you don't have in your life, you are going to face obstacles. We all do. But what makes us different and what defines us is how we face those obstacles.
Amen, Brother Bill. Hopefully you will never have to deal with anything that's even close to what our next guest went through. But his spirit, his courage, and his attitude sure will help the rest of us get through whatever challenges we're destined to face. But for Sean Van Garena, everything changed in an instant back in 2008 after a horrendous car accident. Sean suffered a traumatic brain injury, a broken neck, and he had multiple strokes. But his recovery has been nothing short of miraculous. Not only is he able to walk again, listen to this, folks, he just made the U.S. World Paratriathlon Championship team. Sean, congratulations. Way to go.
Hi, guys. Thank you very much.
Man, what an accomplishment. And, you know, your story is fascinating, and it seems that whenever you tell it, one of the very first things you say is how lucky you are. Do you really believe that?
I've been very blessed, and I certainly do consider myself a very lucky individual. I tell people all the time I'm probably one of the luckiest people you'll ever meet.
And they look at you like, lucky? What are you talking about?
I don't see you wearing green. but yeah, no, I've been very fortunate, and you know, been blessed with an opportunity to do some pretty amazing things, and opportunities that a lot of people did not expect me to have. So
That's a good place.
An interesting and great journey.
See, that's a good place to start here, Sean. So explain to us what your limitations are, what you can do, and what you can't do.
Well, physically, I have a multitude of different challenges. Physically, strength, conditioning, just overall endurance ability, ability to navigate stairs or to really do a lot of things that most people just kind of take for granted because you just grow up. You grow up learning how to walk and then you learn how to run and then you go on from there. And for me, I'm blessed because I'm able to do those things. But at the same time, I have to think about them constantly. I had a traumatic brain injury. There are some neurological challenges there, and had a spinal cord injury, so I have some challenges from that. And then from the stroke, I've got some muscle deficiencies, and some of them that just don't function anymore.
You know, Bill, did you see what he did? I know you did. You're a sharp guy. You asked Sean what his limitations were. He didn't say any limitations. He's called them challenges. Yeah. And before that, he said that he considers himself lucky. So I think we've learned, folks, you know, that attitude, the power of attitude in what it can do for you. And Sean, you had your accident, which we described at the age of 37, certainly not an easy time to have to learn an entirely new way of life. Did you go through a stage when you said, why me?
There's certainly a time for that. You know, first, it was pretty traumatic. I was self-employed and 37-year-old single father and, you know, pretty independent person. And was in pretty decent shape physically and had been for my entire life. And then I had to require 24-hour care. And, you know, my parents had to move in with me and take care of me. And that took a lot. Our independence is something that makes really who we are. And when you lose your independence, you lose yourself. And I think that, you know, the doctor saying, you know, get used to a wheelchair is one thing, but the inability to do what you want when you want, to be able to walk or anything that we just do on a daily basis, to lose that ability, that's devastating.
Talking to Sean Van Garena here, and what a lesson we're learning, because after hearing him say what he just said, now, Sean, you're looking forward to maybe your biggest challenge yet, racing as a member of the U.S. national team at the Paratriathlon Sprint World Championships in New Zealand. What an awesome victory there for you just to go.
It was a pretty great opportunity, to be able to be around the athletes that I was. There are a lot of amazing people out there with incredible stories. And then to be able to represent our country, I can't express to you what an honor that is. And to be competing at that level is really a gift. To get to know some of the people that I've had an opportunity to meet has been one of the greatest gifts of my life.
And you know, Sean, if we would have put a period there, it would have been enough. But no, you have to go a step further and try to pay it forward by starting an organization called LieDownOrStandUp.org. Tell us about that.
Lie Down or Stand Up kind of started off as my motto for life. Partly because of the fact that I'm classified as an ambulating quadriplegic. And I refuse to continue to lie down in bed, which unfortunately is, without getting on my political soapbox, is kind of what our, quote, system encourages people with disabilities to do, is to stay at home. And for people that try to fight and stand up, there are more challenges for them. But it has then evolved into an advocacy organization, and right now we're putting our board together to get a 501c3, because one of the things that I identified was really important for me, not only physically, but cognitively, mentally, was health and wellness, overall health and wellness, the ability to go and go to the YMCA or go for a walk, and the ability to start to get some independence back. So one of the things that we're doing now is we're putting together physical therapists, occupational therapists, PTs, trainers, coaches that are willing to donate some of their time so that we can offer health and wellness programs to people with disabilities at no cost.
It's LieDownOrStandUp.org. Great conversation with Sean Van Garina. Thanks, Sean. Up next, how to follow your passion, work fewer hours, and make more money. This is Growing Boulder. Sign up for the Growing Boulder Insider Newsletter. Be the first to see our latest interviews, stories, and tips for making each day count. Sign up today at growingboulder.com. Miss an episode of Growing Boulder Radio? Subscribe to our podcast and get it on your mobile device. Details at growingboulder.com/podcasts.
On this program, we talk a whole lot about how following your passions can lead to a vibrant and rewarding life, especially if you can figure out how to make a little loot from it.
Never heard a thing, did it? And the timing has never been better to follow your dreams and turn them into reality. At least that's what Nancy Collamer believes. She's a career coach who writes a weekly column for nextavenue.org and Forbes.com. And she's got kind of an interesting take on how we should be spending our future. In fact, she wrote a book about it called Second Act Careers, 50 Plus Ways to Profit from Your Passions During Semi-Retirement. Hey, Nancy, you there?
Good to be here.
Great to have you with us. Tell me, where did the idea for this book come from? You're way too young and active and moving around to have sat back and thought about retirement.
Oh, not true. Not true. I am actually in my mid-50s, and like so many of the people who I am friendly with, we're all, you know, taking a look at our 401ks and our non-existent pensions, and feeling healthy and active and saying, wow, you know, as opposed to generations before us, we could retire and still have 20 good years ahead of us. How are we going to fill that time? And how are we going to make a little extra income along the way so that we can have a comfortable and enjoyable and fruitful retirement?
Yeah, it really is a great time to be over 50 because so much has changed. I know there are a lot of people out there that, you know, they don't want more options. They say, leave me alone. I've done it. I'm burned out. I want to sit on the couch. But as you mentioned, a lot of people are invigorated and excited by the many options that are out there. Was it hard for you to find examples of people who have reinvented themselves in ways that you thought were worthy of your book?
It was anything but hard. I actually, once I signed the contract for the book, I placed a little query in a newsletter that I belong to, and literally in less than 24 hours, I had responses from over 50 people throughout the United States who are over 50 doing all sorts of different and interesting things. You know, in the book, I've got everything from a rabbi turned stand-up comedian to a woman who started a food blog, to somebody else who lives in Hawaii who sells informational products on the web, and a woman who became went from being a news producer to an international dog show judge and everything in between. And it really is a wonderful time, largely because of the Internet, to find all sorts of new ways to profit from your passion.
Now, I know what's happening. You know, people are listening in their cars or at home right now, and they're saying, wait a minute, she just said this is a great time to reinvent yourself. Yeah. You know, a lot of people are sitting around thinking with the economic downturn, this is like the worst time.
Yeah, well, let me be clear. You know, the fact of the matter is that what you are looking to do is to continue in a full-time job, it is a challenging time out there. You know, that the number of full-time employment opportunities, particularly for people over 50, has decreased in recent years. But if you're somebody who's interested in what I say to people is worry less about finding a job and more about filling a need. And if you do that, you will find there are lots of different avenues for turning your talents into income, whether you do that on the Internet, by starting a small service business, by working part-time, tremendous opportunities also for working on a freelance and temporary basis. So for people that are interested in finding flexible opportunities, it really is a very, very good time.
We're speaking with Nancy Collamer, folks, who has written a book called Second Act Careers, 50-plus Ways to Profit from Your Passions During Semi-Retirement. And Nancy, Bill and I are in a fairly large group that encourage people to take some chances, to dream big, to pursue their passions. And, you know, of course, when it turns out well, it's the greatest thing that ever happened to somebody. But a lot of people are afraid, and rightly so. You know, as you mentioned, a lot of us lost a whole lot over the past few years. So how do we get started? How do we take this chance? How do we make a leap to creating what's next for us without jeopardizing what little we have left?
Yeah, well, I'd like to say to think big and act small. And by that, I mean, you know, think about what's important in your life. Think about the big questions. What type of lifestyle do you want to have? What type of work is going to be satisfying? But then after you do that, take small steps along the way, and you could do it on a daily basis, weekly basis, or monthly basis, depending on your individual timetable. But, you know, start to do some research. In the book, I've got dozens of great resources where you can explore new career ideas. Think about signing up to take a workshop or a class. You know, and I'm not saying you need to go back to school for a degree, but on the Internet, there are just thousands of different training programs that for every type of career imaginable. I mean, in doing the research for the book, I came across a 3-day training program on how to become a professional dog walker. If you can dream it up, there is a training program out there to help you. So the most important thing is to begin to take small steps. And as you do, when you begin to immerse yourself in new worlds and new possibilities, that is when I'd like to say the real magic happens. That's when opportunities, you begin to learn about opportunities that you never knew were possible.
Yeah, I think what happens in many cases, Nancy, people think about, well, what do I like? What's fun? And in your head, you almost think, well, that would have to be like a volunteer thing. Like the TV producer that you mentioned who became like a dog show judge. You wouldn't expect to be able to make money from being a dog show judge, but you can.
You can. And you know, in her case, and I think she's very illustrative of the road many people are taking. Our income is coming from several different sources. And what we're increasingly seeing in this economy for boomers and, quite frankly, for all workers is people are generating their livelihood from a couple of different income sources. In her case, she's a dog show judge. She also has written a couple of books about dogs. She offers dog behavioral training classes, and she speaks to groups. So she's got several different sources where her income is coming from. And that's true of people in a number of different fields. You see people who take their expertise and they're working as a teacher and a writer and a coach. And there's lots of different ways of generating income. And so, as I mentioned before, it's we're living at a time when it's no longer about finding the job. It's about really filling needs in the marketplace. And coming up with a variety of different products and services. And I know that sounds intimidating, but when you read the stories in the book, you'll begin to realize that it's a lot easier than a lot of people think it will be.
Yeah, the book lists 50 ways, and while some of them do directly involve the Internet, fair to say, Nancy, that almost all of them can be benefited by a knowledge of the Internet, at least for marketing. If you've got a voice these days, folks, don't be intimidated by the Internet. Do you feel that?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that... one of the things I say about the boomer generation is I think we bring a very welcome combination of both at least exposure to high-tech, but also the good old-fashioned high-tech ways, high-touch ways of generating business. And you know, we're the generation that's not scared to pick up the phone, go meet with people in person, at the same time that most of us have learned how to, you know, maneuver around things like the email and using tools like Facebook and LinkedIn. And if you haven't learned that, now's the time to start because it's very much a part of earning income, as you said, no matter what you do. It doesn't have to be an Internet-based business.
The book is called Second Act Careers. Find out more about it and its author at mylifestylecareer.com. Great information from Nancy Collamer. Man, I got to tell you, an hour sure goes by fast when every single guest comes on to talk not just about what they've done, but what they hope to do in the future. And no matter where your life is headed, you've heard you can change careers and still make money doing what you love. You can still rock out at 75 like Jefferson Starship's David Freiberg, and it is possible to overcome any obstacle life can throw at you.
Very exciting stuff. In the coming weeks, folks, you will hear from more people who are not just talking the talk, but they're living their lives in ways that defy conventional wisdom. Be sure to check out our Growing Boulder Facebook page. Like us and see what a difference Growing Boulder can make in your life.
You know, sometimes in life we all need a little boost to help us take that first step down the road that we've always wanted to go on. Don't wait any longer. Start Growing Boulder.
The Growing Boulder Radio Show is a production of Growing Boulder, LLC. All rights reserved. This program was recorded at Growing Boulder Studios in Orlando and is available as a weekly podcast on NPR One, iTunes, Spotify, and TuneIn. It is written and produced by Jill Middleton, Mark Middleton, and Bill Schaefer. Technical director is Jason Morrow. Production manager is Michael Nanis. And our most important team member, you. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram to keep growing bolder every day.